Warning. The following show contains intelligent thoughts, well-formulated ideas, and occasional pointless banter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hashing Out the Details. I am your host, D.L. Williams. Today is April the 11th, 2024. Since our last episode, we had Easter, the NCAA Basketball Championship, the start of baseball season, WrestleMania, and a total solar eclipse which gripped the nation. We'll talk about a few of those things and a little bit more, all to come here on today's episode of Hashing Out the Details. Alrighty then, so leading off in sports, UConn became the first team in nearly two decades to go back-to-back in the NCAA March Madness Championship Tournament. Kudos to them as they take their place in the history books following this phenomenal performance. I'm already looking forward to next year. Now, on to pseudo-sports. Much like most guys my age, as a youngster, I was a huge fan of professional wrestling. For nostalgia purposes, for roughly the last 20 years or so, I tune in every year to watch WrestleMania, mostly as a reminder of a far less responsible time in my life. Now, the reason I stopped watching many years ago was that I felt the entertainment aspect of wrestling had become so dominant over the actual performance part of it that the wrestling matches themselves were entirely inconsequential. Most of that is due to the WWE, formerly known as the WWF, CEO Vince McMahon's obsession with transforming professional wrestling into sports entertainment. For those of you who are not in the know on what actually occurred behind the scenes, nearly 25 years ago, Vince McMahon barred the phrase wrestling and wrestlers from all WWE materials and telecasts. The announcers were forbidden and barred from using the technical names of techniques that were used in the ring. They were instead instructed and coached to only emphasize the story and dramatic aspects of the contest, as they were calling them. However, in a recent stunning turn of events, Vince McMahon was forced to resign from his position within WWE due to a sex trafficking scandal, which is looking worse by the day. Therefore, this has left Paul Triple H Levesque as the de facto head of World Wrestling Entertainment, and he is very clearly making a lot of changes to the WWE's format. Right up front out of the gate was the lifting of the ban on mentioning wrestling or the holds and technique names in the ring, and a de-emphasis on the entertainment aspect of wrestling. This past weekend at the WWE's flagship event, WrestleMania, I personally heard the word wrestling or wrestler used no less than 36 times, including at the grand finale of the main event, which, in my not-so-humble opinion, was the best wrestling match I've seen since I was in high school. It saw, in its main event, a three-year championship reign come to an end, and a brand new WWE Universal Champion crowned in Cody Rhodes, son of the legendary Dusty Rhodes. The match itself was fantastic between the two competitors, and the involvement of just a few folks from yesteryear in the outcome was icing on the cake, concluding with a celebration that lasted over 20 minutes in the ring, including family, friends, other wrestlers, ring announcers, commentators, and just about anybody else you could possibly think of. And in an obvious exclamation point meant to clue everybody into the WWE's new trajectory, one of the announcers made a loud declaration, and I'm going to play a clip of it for you here in just a second, but this was a declaration to the fans that the Vince McMahon era of sports entertainment had come to an end and that wrestling had returned to the WWE.
Damn it! I love professional wrestling!
And that, folks, is how you start a new era. Kudos to them. I wish them all the best. I hope they make wrestling as big as it was when I was a teenager. I look forward to seeing what happens. A breaking story just popped up on my newsfeed while I'm recording this today. OJ Simpson has passed away at the age of 76 following a battle with pancreatic cancer, which he mostly kept hidden from the public. He leaves behind 4 children and a legacy of sports dominance, a knack for the entertainment industry, and of course, infamy for the legendary trial of the century of 94 through 95, where he was acquitted for the murders of his ex-wife, Nicole Brown Simpson, and her friend, Ron Goldman. Once again, that's O.J. Simpson, Hall of Fame running back, dead at the age of 76. Okay, so in other news, a report was issued yesterday, which unfortunately points back to a previous episode where I spoke about the president's commentary on during the State of the Union address, where he claimed that inflation was falling and that it was no longer the problem that it previously had been. Now, the report that was issued yesterday, which will be turned over to the Fed as they will then weigh whether to continue with interest rate restrictions. The report states that in the month of March 2024, core consumer goods have risen approximately 4%, which continued the trend from the previous month of January to February of 3.8%. Consumer goods and services continue to rise in price. I gotta tell you folks, in an election year, this is not what the current sitting president wants to be dealing with or hearing about. President Biden has done everything short of send out little planes with banners hanging off the back saying, inflation's going down, inflation's going down. He's been shouting it from the hilltops to anybody willing to listen. The problem is the numbers are not backing up what he's preaching. The people believe their pocketbook over the president's podium. It's just that simple. I read somewhere last week that the White House and President Biden's campaign managers are in sort of a state of shock in that they can't understand why what's left of the middle class is strongly polling for Donald Trump as opposed to President Biden. And while I accept that it's highly unlikely that anybody with any kind of stroke in the Democratic leadership is listening to what I'm saying in this podcast, I encourage you, open your ears. If you have to, put your hands up to your ears. Put on a stethoscope and hold it up to the speaker if you have to. But listen very carefully.
It's the economy, stupid.
So anyways, that brings me to my final news story of the day. As we all know, on April 8th, the country experienced its first total solar eclipse in quite some time. It occurred across 15 states and lasted about 4 minutes and 30 seconds, give or take. In the United States, Texas was the bullseye for eclipse viewing purposes, and according to some economists, the eclipse actually created a $1.2 billion tourism boost to the Lone Star State of Texas, which is obviously very good news for Texas. They need all the money they can get to maintain the defense of our southern border. Of course, that all being said, whenever events of this type occur, we often see the sudden outburst of crackerjack diploma expert. I was reviewing NASA's website Sunday night for information about timing on the eclipse across the continent, just a little research for my own personal enrichment, and I came across a section right on NASA's splash page on its website where it offered information to alleviate the concerns of the citizenry based on some, well, we'll call it less than stellar or crackerjack diploma expert opinions in regards to dangers presented to the public by the total eclipse. Allow me to review just a few of the ones that NASA felt it necessary to address on its website. Number one, The eclipse will in no way unleash a wave of earthquakes across the United States. I'm just not sure where our educational system went so tragically wrong that there are so many people concerned that this could even scientifically be a plausible concern that they felt it necessary to address this theory on the NASA website. And if you thought that one was good, wait till you hear this one. A total solar eclipse poses no danger to unborn babies. Yep, that's right, folks. It's the same sun and the same sunlight that you're out in every single day. It doesn't suddenly change because the moon's in front of it. Much like it doesn't change if the clouds are out. Actually, you're getting even less sun. So, no, it's not harmful. There's not magic radiation suddenly coming from the sky because the moon moved between the Earth and the sun. It doesn't change what kind of rays have been coming at you the entire time. Actually, it reduces them. Oh, and now this one. This one's my favorite. According to NASA's experts, a solar eclipse will not poison all of the Earth's food supply.
That's it, I'm out of here.
Once again, this particular theory obviously falls under the category of made up by people who spent way too much time watching 1950s sci-fi movies in a semi-furnished basement at roughly 1:30 in the morning. You see, this is the problem with TBS running Friends 87 times per day. Back when I was a kid, TBS would show all those old-fashioned sci-fi movies every Saturday afternoon, and a lot of times it'd be on really late at night, too, on our local PBS channel. We had a show locally produced called Uncle Ted's Monster Mania, where he showed a lot of those kind of movies like Them and Attack of the 50-Foot Tarantula, or even the original Night of the Living Dead. A lot of today's young people haven't seen those movies or even heard of them or their plot. So when these kind of stupid theories start circulating the way around Reddit and Quora and Facebook and TikTok and all the other social media sites, they haven't seen these things, so they're not able to look at them and go, "Hey, I remember that. Is this how that movie said the giant guinea pigs got started?" I keep telling you, everybody, TV and movies have their place. Well, now that we've reviewed a few of the lesser intellectual arguments of our modern day, we're just going to take a very short break while I catch my breath and we're back to talk about our main story of the day, the death of the old-fashioned American hobby. Don't go nowhere. Alrighty then, so I have a question for all of you listening. How many of you have actual, honest-to-God hobbies? You know, something you do in your leisure time just for the pure enjoyment, relaxation, self-enrichment of it all. I personally have a couple, mostly collecting different things. Not for monetary value or investment or any kind of monetary or financial gain from it, just because I enjoy it. And I'll be honest, I always just assumed that everybody had things like this, for the most part. Not everyone, but most folks. That was until just the other day. I was reading an article which was published in Nature magazine in conjunction with Harvard Medical Publishing. And in that magazine is stated that in the U.S. alone, participation on a weekly basis in a pleasure hobby dropped from 88% in 1985 to just 9% in the year 2022. Of course, me being me, I decided maybe I wanted to look into this. What exactly could cause over 70% of the U.S. population, culturally and sociologically, to shift away from what apparently to that point was considered an ordinary, everyday act of life? My first assumption was it was obviously just the busyness of the modern world, having infinite information at our fingertips, things like that. Just the fact that the clock was full with so many more activities and responsibilities that had never been there before, that it just booted out space for things like hobbies and pleasure activities like that, that it was just that simple. But upon a little more review, it turns out it's not quite as simple as I really thought it was. In 1980, the top three hobbies for women were baking and cooking, arts and crafts, which included crocheting and needlework, and reading. For men, the top three hobbies were number one, working on cars, number two, sports card collecting, number three, stamp collecting. Now, when you hear those hobbies listed, they all sound very traditional, very standard, something that we all can imagine somebody doing as a pastime when they're trying to relax and just tune out of the world for a little while. However, if you fast forward 40 years later, I want you to think about just a few of those hobbies that I just listed. Let's use needlework and crocheting as an example. Needlework, sewing, crocheting, that kind of thing, was something that was usually passed down from mother to daughter over hundreds of years. Now, what happened was when women started entering the workplace, if they didn't personally have time to teach their daughters those kinds of activities, they learned them in school in what we used to call home ec. Home ec often taught needlework, sewing, some crocheting, some needlepoint, things like that. It exposed women who later took it on as a hobby to those crafting forms so that they could decide they liked it. And when it became a part of their teenage life and high school life and later home life, they carried it with them as a source of pleasure and self-enrichment. Very often, over the course of a lifetime, becoming very, very proficient at it. Now think about this. Home economics began getting phased out as a class in the late 80s. Actually, in some areas of the country, even earlier than that. It got to a point where by the mid-90s, home ec was only available in 2 out of every 7 high schools. By the year 2000, it had been essentially eliminated from the standard high school curriculum in the United States. Thus, a major source of exposure to a skill, a hobby, and an art form that many women had taken for granted up to that point had been eliminated from the educational landscape. No exposure, no education, no continuation, no hobby. Let's look at auto repair. Generations of young boys gained an education in auto repair, holding the flashlight for dad as he changed the oil, as he fixed the brakes, as he changed the fan belt on the family car. Later, this early rudimentary education would be filled in further through classes that were offered through tech or through their own high school's shop program. In 1975, 87% of all United States high schools offered auto shop as an elective class. By 1985, that was down to 70%. By 1995, it was down to 11%. And by 2005, it was less than 1%. According to my research, it seems that the main reason for the phasing out of auto shop in the standard high school, as opposed to only being available in vocational and technical schools, was the advent of onboard computer systems in the automobile manufacturing industry. It seems high schools just couldn't keep up with the demand for diagnostic equipment, etc. Apparently, working on cars went from being about nuts and bolts to computer engineering and software. Unfortunately, this rendered the hobby repairs obsolete. There's an obvious undertone to this, and it's technology and the failure to transmit from one generation to the next the knowledge and skill set to carry on the hobbies and traditions of the past. As I sit here, I think of my grandfather, My grandfather taught me how to tie flies for fly fishing. Some very basic woodworking, like I can remember we built a birdhouse, we built squirrel feeders, flower trellises, taught me stamp collecting. That's a hobby I carry through right to today. I have thousands and thousands of stamps. He taught me sports card collecting, some coin collecting, and my grandfather was a hobbyist. He liked to spend his time doing nothing very important, and he enjoyed it. And he passed that on to me, and that's something I'll probably be grateful for the rest of my life. Those little stamps, those little sports cards, they'll never make me rich or anything like that. Not monetarily. But because of those little postal stamps, guess what? I've heard of countries that most people don't even know ever existed. I know about culturally significant events in other time periods that the school textbooks never quite had time to cover. Tying flies at my grandfather's fly tying vise required me to learn patience and calm and concentration. Those are skills that are part of my life. My hands, unfortunately, don't allow me to do that kind of work anymore, but I did enjoy it for its season in my life. It was a hobby. It was a way to pass the time constructively and fulfillingly. I mentioned before about that article in Harvard Medical Publishing. It went on to say that it's pretty much a medical certainty that having time for enrichment and pleasure activities like hobbies are a major influence on the happiness level we attain in our daily lives. There have been a multitude of statements by the American Psychiatric Association and the American Psychology Association that attest to the idea that hobbies have a positive effect on self-esteem, sense of purpose, combating fatigue, depression, and in minimizing the effects of some serious mental disorders and mental illnesses such as schizophrenia, bipolar, and even multiple personality disorder. So even science is on board by saying that having quality hobbies and time for hobbies is a major influence on our mental health. Yet what's going on today? Like I said before, we see the knowledge and skill set for these hobbies being lost in transmission from one generation to the next. We see technology taking the place of analog hobbies. I can remember when I was a kid that there was a stamp and coin dealer in every, maybe not every town, but in every area you could think of at least one or two. Every town had a card shop. You know, like a baseball or a sports card shop. Every town had one. Our mall had at least three. And then there was one legitimately a stone's throw from the house I grew up in, okay? You could find one anywhere you wanted to go. I can remember me and my friends would scrounge money together and run around to, you know, 2 yards over to the card shop and pick up some cards or, oh heaven, I'm definitely dating myself on this one, Pogs. And by the way, yes, I collected Pogs and I had an awesome Ninja Star Smasher. And if you know what that is, you're just as old as I am, so don't judge me and don't make me feel any worse about being old, okay? But that brings me to 2024. There is not a card shop anywhere to be found. I actually looked, and the closest one is 47 miles away. There is one coin and stamp dealer for 150 miles from where I live, and I live in a relatively suburban area of Pennsylvania. So, we're not, certainly not lacking for major retail sources. Now, truth be told, we don't have a Trader Joe's or a Costco yet, but that's a topic for another episode. Now, I understand economic basics, so I know that nobody's going to open shops if there's no money to be made in the scene. I get it. Sports card collecting and stamp collecting, along with coin collecting, have become very much niche groups. You can find us on Reddit, you can find us on Quora, you can find us on YouTube under the right channel. But on the whole, these are not widespread, culturally embedded hobbies. Not anymore. Now, what I'm about to steer this towards is probably going to sound a tinge controversial, But this is not my intention. I'm only speaking facts here. I invite you to interpret those facts to your own conclusion. Remember I said that in 1980, the top three women's hobbies were cooking and baking, arts and crafts / needlework, and reading. And I also said just a few moments ago about how you couldn't find a sports card shop, a coin and stamp dealer within, you know, 50 to 100 miles of my location personally. I can't speak to everywhere. And we also talked about how the educational system has done its best to lambaste the very skill transmitting programs like metal shop, wood shop, and auto shop, the very programs that transmitted the knowledge base that contributed to a lifetime of hobbies that were geared towards men. While I'm certainly not claiming that women are immune to this problem, I do invite you to go over to the Hobby Lobby website. Hobby Lobby is the largest hobby and craft-based store in the country. As a matter of fact, it might even be the world. I'm not positive. It's been difficult for me to authenticate that statement, but it sure seems that way. If it's not the largest, it's very, very close. But I'm going to read to you the department listing from Hobby Lobby on their splash page on their website, okay? It reads like this. Departments: home decor, crafts, fabric and sewing, scrapbooking and paper crafts, floral, baking, art supplies, yarn and needle, beads and jewelry, and wearable art. This is things like fashion accessories, tie-dye clothing, stuff like that. Now, anybody with an unbiased, straightforward review of those departments is going to say, yes, this entire store is geared toward women. It is almost entirely built around arts and crafts, things of that nature. Now, I will say they have a fairly extensive art department, which can go 50-50 either way. Drawing, painting, sculpting, and the like are most certainly not gender bias. But like it or not like it, 9 out of the 10 departments offered by Hobby Lobby are traditionally feminine topics of interest. Do I think that there's a mass conspiracy to eliminate male interests from society? No, I don't. But I can say that I suspect a lot of it is because so many of the last two generations to come up from the XY chromosome end of our species, their main hobby, their main interest, their main pastime has been gaming, and thus from the male dominated interests and hobbies, gaming and digital entertainment has in many ways supplanted, erased, and rendered most of the analog traditional hobbies that were male dominated in the past. Which is why most video games are not designed for girls. Businesses know their target audience. However, according to, once again going back to the American Psychiatric Association, heightened levels of electronic gameplay and synthesized realities like virtual reality, video games, etc., the higher your level of usage correlates dramatically to higher levels of depression, dopamine failure, anxiety, heightened levels of cortisol, cognitive disassociation, and a series of other negative mental health problems, which is the opposite effect of what you might call traditional hobbies, which had been shown again in previous studies to have positive influences on almost all the exact same psychological markers. All of these are parts to a much bigger moving puzzle. I fear that if we don't start finding a way to reinstitute, especially amongst the male population, physical analog pastimes, aka hobbies, and find a way to integrate them into
our lives the way they were in the past as really an assumed part of life, of weekly and daily life, that there would be time taken for these things. My belief is that far more harm is due to come. The human mind is built to take time for rest, for recovery, and to just vegetate. Ferris Bueller said it best.
Life moves pretty fast. You don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it.
And with that, we bring this week's episode to a close. Once again, it has been a blast talking to you. This is your host, DL Williams, on Hashing Out the Details. Have a great week and talk to you next time.